We're back. A little earlier than usual. We normally do the live stream at 5 o'clock for those that watch the live stream on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook Live. But today we are here a couple hours early because, you know, life happens and we have to sometimes. So we're good with that. I'm good with that. It's Lee and Tubby here on the Where Eagles Dare podcast. And before we go any further, let's let the music play on a victory week. That is the song that we all know and love. And I love playing it. And I like playing it after a win, a winning week.
100%, man. It always feels better when the Eagles come off a win. The song sounds better. They've been playing it at Kansas City. Every time we score, we were still down 21. I'm like, that doesn't have the same feeling when you're winning.
That's true. Yes, well, we're down like several touchdowns and they score and they play it. It's kind of like, I'm glad they scored. But you know what's funny is that I went to the Cincinnati Bengals and Packers game on Sunday, so I didn't get to see the game live. I had it on my phone, and they have a song that they play when they score. Now, I don't want to slam the Bengals fans too much, but Google that song if you get a chance out there, that anybody listening to this podcast, because it is not very good. It's kind of lame. Ours is.
It's not like it's from the 40s.
It is. It does. You hear it. You've been to Bengals games. You know, let's fly to Cincinnati Bengals. And it's like, okay, that's maybe.
I think that's their original.
Yeah.
Song.
Yeah.
You're still going with it.
Yeah. I know Fly Eagles Fly goes back a ways, and it does have a little bit of age to it, but I think that it sounds much better. I think it just, it really transcends with time. It does fit. It's a good fight song. It works.
Absolutely. And it came from our fans in the parking lot outside the stadium. And it became born. Fly Eagles Fly, authentic song, right, for us, and comes straight from our fans. So we always appreciate it, and we always appreciate it after a win, for sure.
Yeah, it feels great because Sunday's game was definitely not guaranteed, and it was looking bad through about 3.5 quarters. I was sitting in, like I said, Paul Brown Stadium watching a great game between the Bengals and the Packers. That's the one with all the missed field goals in the overtime, which was just insane. But a lot of great offense. Davante Adams lit it up. Jamar Chase lit it up. It was like, if you want to see good NFL action, that was the place to be on Sunday, in my opinion. That or the Chargers-Browns game, which was insane. So if you want to see offense, you want to see craziness, that was where to be. But then watching the Eagles, you know, struggle for three quarters and just looking at my phone. Because, you know, what's funny is I have Sunday Ticket, and so my plan was to watch it on my phone while I was at the Bengal game. But I did not know this. There is a thing on the Sunday Ticket when you bring it up on your phone. If it detects that you're in a stadium, it will not let you access any other game. I don't know why.
Is that right?
I don't know why, but it tells you, hey, we sense that you're in a stadium, so you can't watch any other game. Sorry, enjoy the game you're at. Which I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of sad, because I would really have liked to have watched the game, you know, while I was there, but whatever. Right. But I kept looking at the phone, and it was like three and out. And I'm like, this is not looking good. And I was texting you, what's going on? And you told me the offense looks like it's in mud. So it was not looking good for three quarters. And then I was sitting there. I just have to say I was sitting there, but I just want to share what I went through in the stadium was because it was at a moment at the end of the game, and the Eagles needed a touchdown to win. They got the blocked punt, which I saw on my phone, and then they were on the goal line. And I'm standing there next to my friend, and it was a timeout for the Packers and the Bengals. So everybody was quiet, and they're just waiting for their play to begin. And out of nowhere, I look at my phone, and I see that Hurts runs to the left, 6 yards, touchdown. The stadium was almost silent. And there's my dumb ass with my hands in the air. Yell, touchdown! You know, scream! And everybody's looking at me like I'm a lunatic. And my friend knew what it was. And I was wearing my Ertz Eagles jersey. So people knew. The first thing that a lot of people around me went, what, the Eagles score? The Eagles scored. I went, hell yeah, they did. They just took the lead. So it was pretty funny. It was a good moment. It's something I won't forget. Because it was so quiet in that stadium. It was like everybody just hanging out. Everybody had sat down. They're waiting for the next play. And then my dumbass just screams out touchdown. So it was pretty awesome. So that the song is great. I got another song for us to celebrate victory. This is Wednesday when we do the podcast live stream. So Victory Wednesday, if you will. And this is because it's now it's... Oops, hold on. Let me stop that here. All right, take two. This is the song that we have for this week.
It's Corona time.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Corona time right now.
Or Heineken. Or Heineken. It doesn't matter. It's time to celebrate. It's Corona time. Cheers, buddy.
There's good.
It's Corona time.
And there it is. Corona time for me, anyway. I like when I can...
Tony Romo on out there.
No, I didn't associate it with Tony Romo, and now you've ruined it. Because now I'm thinking, damn... That's the Cowboys that runs that Corona.
Like, how you looking on your fantasy football?
Oh, not good at all.
Line time. I think it says line time or something like that. Corona time, something like that. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, he no longer plays for them, and he's all right. And actually, like,
he's a neutral now.
Yeah, exactly. He's supposed to be. I don't think he really is, but that's all right. But yeah, so it is much better to drink to celebrate something than it is to drink to drown sorrows. I'm just going to say that. So let's get into the game, if you will, and talk a little bit about the highlights of the Panthers and the Eagles. So right off the bat, though, the Eagles get the ball first. And when I rewatched the game, I saw, again, like we've talked about going back to the Chiefs game and going back to even the other games where the offense has kind of struggled, that lack of running, again, right off the bat. The first three plays were exclusively passes. Now, there's something that should be said about that is that we know, and the announcers even bring it up, and it makes sense. The Eagles are an RPO team. They do the run-pass option, which means it gives Jalen Hurts time in the pocket to make a decision on the snap. So they always have a run call in the hole when they call an RPO. The run call's always there. It's just up to Jalen Hurts to decide whether he's going to pull that out of Sanders or Gainwell's hands and try to make a play through the air. So some of this is on Hurts with the lack of running, that it could be a misread. What I noticed in the beginning stages of the Panthers is that they were running a lot of man and they didn't have a lot of men stacked up in the box against the run, yet Hurts continued on that first drive. He had an incomplete pass, short right to Jaeger, trying to do a little dump off, didn't get it. Pass short right to Miles Sanders, trying to do a little swing pass that ended up losing 7 yards. And then, so now you're down in third and 17, and then he passes another short pass, which just kind of infuriated me when you're third and 17. And they were kind of telegraphing what they were doing right off the bat to the Panthers, who are solidly in man. And they're not going to play any of this underneath stuff. They came out like they knew that they what the Eagles were doing. They knew what they were going to do. They'd watched tape, and they knew that this underneath stuff was where the Eagles were going to go, especially if you watch the Kansas City game. The Eagles threw a lot of those short passes, and then our receivers took off down the field. So what did you see right off the bat?
Yeah, man. I mean, same thing. You know, first drive was three straight passes. You know, you have a screen that was blown up. First you have an 8-yard pass. It was downfield. Right. The first pass was to get the first down. And when that didn't work, it was a blown up screen and then the dump off to Sanders. And then here we go marching right back off the field. So it looked like more of the same to me. Uh-oh. I didn't necessarily see an RPO in the first first series. But it was because, like I said, it went to Rager. Then it was a screen. That's a designated screen that was blown up. The screen was blown up. So now we're sitting here third down, like you said. And now we're doing the dump off to Sanders. And they knew that was coming at a minimum. So that was kind of like a throwaway drive. But, you know, just to start the game, I had that bad feeling in my stomach like, oh, wow, we're not going to run the ball again. Man, I hope this ends well. You know, if this is our strategy again, you know, with basically, you know, just putting every possession on the young quarterback. That's always a concern for me.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, granted, it's one possession, but like watching it back, I'm like, okay, that's definitely not a good start. You go three and out, you got to come back from that. The problem is that the Panthers get the ball and they really didn't move the ball that much. But we got the 15-yarder. They get the ball on the 38 after the punt. And right off the bat, Chuba Hubbard goes through the line, and Alex Singleton gets the face mask penalty that gives them 15 yards. Next thing they know, they're in Eagles' side of the territory, and all it takes is a couple of runs and a couple of short passes, and they're in field goal range. Now, granted, the Eagles shut them down as soon as they got into field goal range, which was great, held them to a field goal. But then, so it really wasn't that the Eagles gave up anything on that first possession. So that was something to really take comfort in. And I noticed, and we're going to break it down as we look at the highlights, is that the Eagles and Jonathan Gannon, thank you, sir. I don't know if he listens to this podcast or not, but I think he does, because he listened to us last week talk about all these zones and these deep coverages and how the Chiefs just ate us up with those deep coverages. And you saw a lot of man coverage that we haven't seen before out of this team. I've been saying it since week one. You got Darius Slay and Steven Nelson, and even Avante Maddox. They can cover guys one-on-one. We know they can. We've seen them do it. And you got a guy like Slay, who is a defensive nightmare for receivers. He could be one of the top DBs in the league if given a chance. And you know that he's talking to his D coordinator going, you got to let me play one-on-one. You got to let me test these guys. Let me go up against Robbie Anderson and DJ Moore and see what I can do. So it was nice on that drive that they shut him down. Eagles get the ball back, though, and then it really kind of disintegrated again. They definitely start with bad play calling. That's right. The only way you can really look at it.
I thought the play calling in the second drive was okay. You know, because you start off with a first down run to Sanders. Sanders picks up 6 yards. First carry of the game, Sanders picks up six.
Right.
That's, so now you're in a second drive.
Yeah, you're right. He picked up six in the second drive. So they had a third and four. It was in the second down play. Yeah. Right. So the first down, incomplete pass to Ertz, and then the next one was the 6 yard run. So yeah, so they ran the ball, and then
they ran the ball. He got 6 yards on his first carry.
Right.
You know, you have on his first carry. It may not have been on first, but on Sanders' first carry, the first time we run the ball of the game, our first run in the game goes for 6 yards. So you go, okay, did you see this? You know, it went for 6 yards. You know, can we have something? And then Dickerson gets beat, which, you know, goes into a rush throw, an incomplete pass. And that's just another three and out, you know, just on the second drive there. So you got a good run mixed in with a couple rush throws. And it just shows, and you'll see our third down efficiency just wasn't really good the game until about the fourth quarter.
Well, so like you say, you brought us up to speed is that we've got a third and four after Sanders' 6 yard run. And so this is a chance for Hurts to pick up the first down. And I want you to notice something that I noticed watching the broadcast back is this formation. It's not a bad formation, but the problem is Sanders was in the lineup and they sent him off before they went to this four wide out set. Because, and I don't understand why. In fact, I think he's down here. In fact, if you look at my arrow, he's down here. He was flanking Hurts, and Hurts actually sent him off and he came down here at wide out. And so you've got five wides going on third and four. Now, if you look at the lineup that Carolina puts out there, they have four men on the line of scrimmage. They don't have eight men in the box. This is a good time to run the ball on third and four. I don't know why you sent Sanders out like that. Now,
I guess we have to see the play before he sends them in motion to see where they're set up at in order to get a real perspective. This is at the snap.
This is at the snap. So, and the problem is that it's, if you look at it, you can see where our trips are right here. And then you've got Sanders down here. And then up here, I think is Rager. It might be Smith. Mm-hmm. I can't see from that distance. But then you've got their defenders are all lined up in man. They're man across the board. They're right up on the line of scrimmage on a third and four play. So as the play goes, you see that play. It just, he ends up getting rushed on the play and he misses.
Because Dickerson gets washed.
Oh, he gets blown up.
I mean, if you watch the play, Dickerson gets beat. Yeah, immediately off their line. Yeah, you already want it to be a quick throw. And you watch, Dickerson is just and he before Hurts even, if you really rewind it back, before Hurts even stops and plants his foot to gather, Dickerson has already lost the battle. So imagine your lineman has already lost the battle before you can do your three-step drop.
Yep.
You know, just these also play into Hurts' inefficiency on third downs, is the poor tackling there.
Yeah, no,
when we had the numbers there, we had the numbers. Dickerson is beat immediately. That's the first thing I noticed. Like, how do you, third and four? How can we get a quick pass off on third and four? And as soon as he's coming out of his drop, he is immediate pressure.
Right.
And I thought that really affected that play. But it was just more of the same, you know, in that second drive.
I'm
not going to put it all on that. Just more of the same.
No, yeah, exactly. On a third and four, I don't know if it's you got to make better play calls than that. I don't know if going five wide down your own territory, sending the running back out. That to me, it was just like, wow, you could have, you had five men in the box there. That if your linemen do their job, you hand the ball off to Sanders, he's got 4 yards easily. So it's about reading the
personnel. Every play looks bad when your lineman doesn't block. Every pass looks like a bad idea, but Dickerson gets destroyed. It was almost, that was unacceptable. We had the numbers. We had 5-on-4 there. And for Dickerson to get blown up, I mean, I'm talking about before her, we don't know what the play was because it was really blown up by the lack of blocking. Almost immediately, like I said, if a quarterback can't even plant his back foot and he's already has somebody in his face, we don't know what the play was because it's already blown up at that point because the line isn't doing their job. It starts with the line.
I don't want to nitpick on a win. I definitely don't. I think there when, you know, with, again, they're in man coverage. And this is something that if I'm looking at this film the next day and I see that, I'm going to tell Hurts, you've got a couple of options there. It's clearly man coverage. You can see that by the way the defense is lining up. And then at the snap, when all the men go with their receivers, and that guy's coming up the line like that, take off running. There's so many things he could have done than hurried that throw. And I know that we don't want Hurts to continually be that running guy. We want him to be able to stand in the pocket and make throws. But the pocket collapsed so quickly. That's a spot where if Hurts takes off, he's got the first down. Now, that's foreshadowing because later in the game, that's what he does. So I think he got his feet under him. I'm just thinking going forward in the future, when you see a play like that on third and four, it can be worrisome because you're looking at what's going to happen down the line against other tough defenses. So just wanted to point that out. Now we got a good highlight to look at. So the Eagles end up punting on that one, give the ball back to Darnold, and then we've got this immediate play here. Now I want to say something before, this is right at the snap. This is something I didn't think I would have seen against when we were playing against the Chiefs, and to see it against the Panthers is so encouraging. Look at where these guys are lined up. These guys are lined up on these receivers, and then you've got Singleton over here that's covering out of the backfield. You've got the linebacker here covering. This receiver's covered. This tight end is covered. Trimble's covered. So you're watching them. They've got this in man. And what ends up happening is because they're in man, as Robbie Anderson comes down, Slay has got a great play on the ball. So this is the play for the interception.
And Barnett makes him throw that early. The DA got definitely great pressure here. Look at him. Just squeezed.
Amazing.
They made him throw that ball a lot earlier than he wanted to, 100%.
Yeah,
I really like the line play on that as well. They were in good man. But if you watch, that pocket collapsed on Darnold so fast that he had to force. He felt that pressure, and he forced that high throw.
Barnett is pushing the offensive lineman. So for those of you who are listening to the podcast, we're going to describe it as much as possible that are listening to it. But this is the play that Slay made the interception. Yeah, he's right on Darnold.
It's a great high point.
Look at where he picks
ball
it.
Skills.
Yeah, so it was actually intended for DJ Moore. And then if you watch after the play, I'm going to back it up just a little bit. You see that he gets completely laid out. Rodney McLeod lays out DJ Moore. Bam! Right there. Just takes him out, which is amazing. And then he runs it back down to the goal line, in fact. And then they do the little celebration where he rocks the baby because Darius Slay was a brand new father this past week. So it was nice that he got to have the to hold the baby up and cradle the football like a baby on that interception. So now it changes the whole scope of the game in the first quarter. You get the ball down near the goal line. You really got to do something with it at this point, don't you? I mean, you would think.
It's a really, really, yeah, I don't want to get ahead of it. It's just a really bad audible to Watkins here. I mean, he audibles into a really bad play, Hurts does. I just remember this drive because I'm like, we're going to get some points here. Yeah, sure. Just that first quarter woes again for us,
man. Yeah. The first one was a short right pass to Quez for a minus 5 yards. So now we're already first and goal on the 10, and now we're back.
It was a bad audible.
Yeah, exactly. And then he does another short pass to the left. They get 3 yards. Now they're down to the 12. So at this point, we've got third and goal from the Carolina 12 trying to get into the end zone. This is where he ends up scrambling and ends up going back to Devontae Smith at the goal line, which was a nice play. If you look at the play, the Panthers again running man coverage, so they're chasing everybody down. So this is where if Hurts could use his quick legs to get out of this, you have a safety valve. It's perfect for anything. And then with Smith coming back to the ball, he just makes a great catch because he's covered. Everybody's covered if you look at it in the end zone. And he just makes a great catch on the 2-yard line.
The first down sets the tone. The first down loss, the 5-yard loss or 4 yards on that first down, sets the tone for the whole – because this is 3rd and 12 here. I know it's good, 3rd and goal, but it's 3rd and goal from the 12.
Yeah, 3rd and goal from the 12. So then it sets up 4th down.
Right, 3rd and goal from the 12.
To me, this was almost when they go – it's 4th and goal now. When they complete that pass and they get down to the 2, what always scares me is, like, if it would have been 4th and goal from the 12 – they would have definitely kicked field goal. But because they got that play, now, you know, we're thinking, hey, let's go for it on 4th down, which, you know how I feel about that. I'm like, take the sure point. I know the analytics. I know I understand that, the odds and everything. But to me, sure points in the NFL are more important than taking a risk when you're – I know it's the 2-yard line. Maybe if you're on the 1-yard line, but the 2-yard line to me is it increases the amount of risk that you need to take. So this is a play on the 4th and goal from the 2. Hurts backs up, fakes to Sanders, and then boom, touchdown to Devontae Smith. But the problem is we've got a really bad problem here. Another touchdown taken off the board by penalties, which we saw this 3 times against the Kansas City Chiefs, where we just make stupid penalties.
Is that 3 straight weeks now we've gotten this call at some point?
This pick play.
The offensive pass interference.
Yeah, because JJ got it against the Chiefs, and then Ward doesn't even try to disguise it. If you look at this, he runs right into the defender. Greg Ward takes off. It's clearly to knock the defender off that is covering Smith and man. And he just blocks him. He just blocks him when you look at it. He just runs right into him. He doesn't even runs try right to disguise him. It. It's so then
I don't know the stat. I saw it earlier, but they talked about how many touchdowns have been taken away off of penalties from just Hurts. I think it showed the stat where it was like, right here. This is the 7th or something.
Boom. Yeah, right. Just runs right into him.
Does you got to just keep running, Ward. You have to just keep. And Ward's a quarterback, so he understands it from both perspectives. Ward's an ex-quarterback, Greg Ward.
Yeah.
So he understands it from both perspectives. Just another week, another bonehead play.
Yeah.
Another play where we just don't come up with 7 when we should have.
And again, that's something we can't have, and especially going up against a team like this coming up, like with the Buccaneers, we can't have mistakes like that. We can't have another touchdown taken off the board because – we could be up 7-3. Instead, it's tied 3-3, and the Panthers get the ball back. And they basically come down. This time, the defense goes into a little bit more of a zone. I'm going to show you it here. If you look at the play, see where they're lined up now. So they've abandoned this kind of man coverage. They're back into where they were playing against the Chiefs. And when you play in this type of defense, now they've really got 6 men in the box, 1 guy down here. They've got 3 wide receivers up top and then a receiver down below. And we've got Slate, but they're not playing man. They're playing zone. And what ends up as a result is this play here. Now, I don't want to downgrade the defense too much because this is an excellent play. Chuba Hubbard gets the ball and takes it just about 20 yards down the field. You can't really knock the defense on this because if you watch it in slow motion, the zone is bad, but they do come up to make a stop. And it's Harris right here that goes into the fray, and DJ Moore just knocks him off the ball, just pinches him into the side. And look at the gap that opens for Hubbard. So Slay right here down at the bottom doesn't even stand a chance. So when you watch
that was poor tackling by Slay on that for sure.
Yeah,
but that's what you expect. You expect your corner to come up and make that play on the island. Like, you know, that's part of his job as well too. That's why you can crash down because you expect, okay, if it is a run, he's supposed to make this tackle here.
He should.
And furthermore, why would you let Chuba Hubbard even get the sideline there? It was just poor technique on Slay.
Yeah.
If he gets his hips to the sideline, he forces at least Hubbard back to the rest of his defense. But he goes inside. Chuba, being a running back, sees his hips rotation and goes to the outside. Makes him look like just the worst tackler ever.
Exactly. On that.
He just ran right past him.
100%. Yeah, and I don't expect my DBs to make too many tackles on big running backs, but
him to touch him.
I do expect, and he just got stiff-armed and knocked down. It's a bad play, but it was made worse by the fact that I think that Harris overplayed it. He comes bursting into the line, which I appreciate that aggressiveness considering how often the Chiefs ran the ball down our throat. We wanted to stop that this week, so I'm not going to knock it too much, but it is a big play, and it was a good play by them, especially with Moore making that hell of a block. And then just forcing it out. Next play after that, though, this one is also, it's a bad play by the defense, but I can't really fault them because on this one, Avante Maddox has got the coverage on, I believe it's on Moore. And as Darnold backs up to pass. He just falls down. He's got him in man coverage and then just slips. And then Moore makes a great play down to the goal line. Yeah. It's so now they're down on the 5 yard line and it's first and goal. My problem with this is when they get to third and goal from like the 5.5 is this play right here. This cannot happen. That play open.
Right.
They were playing man. And this is, they were a little bit confused. I think Harris was confused between the man assignment and the zone assignment because he went with Robbie Anderson. But Nelson already had Anderson covered. And actually, after it was over, Nelson turns to Harris and says, "You messed up, dude. That was your man, was Trimble, was the right. tight end." So when you see the play, when you see the play back, you can clearly see how when they line up, they're lined up in a good position. And then as the ball is released, Nelson goes with Robbie Anderson, and so does Harris. And you see Trimble right here all alone. And Singleton was covered in space. And then after it's over, Singleton actually points to Harris. Did you see that? There's Harris going with Robbie Anderson. Trimble gets it, and then he just points at him. That was your man. He tells him right off right. the bat.
He immediately throws yeah. his hands up. Like, yeah, he what knew. Are you doing? You're supposed to have him. 100%, man.
So now Eagles down 10-3 at this point. And it's you know, it is what it is. It was rough in the first quarter. They get the ball back to start of the second quarter, and it's again more of the same. But our defense is starting to step up. This play right here is just brilliant. This is just a great play by Avante Maddox. So Darnold throws a deep ball into the end zone, saves a touchdown. I mean, it, just at the point of attack that what Maddox does to be able to recover from that. And
yeah, that was good ball skills there from Maddox, 100%.
The thing that
good
that
deflection. It's a great deflection. It's what we need. It's what we've been looking for.
The thing that I love about man, and you've heard me say this, I don't mind zone. Zone is appropriate in certain situations. And man can get you beat. But if you've got guys like Maddox and Slay and Nelson that can cover in man, you can do so much more with your defense because it doesn't require players to play out of position. So I've always been a proponent of a aggressive, even a sometimes a blitz-heavy man defense. I mean, that's what I'm used to under Jim Johnson. I think that's who spoiled me. Was we had so many playmakers that could make plays on the ball at corner that our front seven could just dominate the line of scrimmage and those defenses. So I'm used to that. That's what I as an Eagles fan, that's what I expect and I want to see. I don't want to see these multiple read Tampa 2 zone coverages. I just don't believe in them. And when I see them, it leaves too much open for the receivers to get. And this is an example. Could in a zone, could this have prevented it? Maybe. But if you've got a guy like Maddox that can make that play, it's really important to have, in my opinion. So the Eagles get the ball back, and here's a play where Hurts almost gets Gainwell killed. At this point, I don't know what he's doing right there. He gets him.
He should have ran it.
Exactly. And again, we're talking man coverage. You see these defenders, they're lined up. They're watching Gainwell. Everybody's on a man, and you're watching him. He's waiting for him to catch this pass, and Hurts knows this. If he continues to follow,
there's no reason to throw that ball there. And like you said, I believe Hurts knows this. He knows it's a bad play. He's already pointing. He knows he runs there. That's the first down. That was definitely a just indicative of the entire first half. Just wasn't a lot of good decision making on Hurts' part at all. And defense was holding it down, luckily, man. But yeah, that was the bad play. I was like, come on, you're gonna get Gainwell literally taken out the game. He got smacked on that play.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do that to your rookie there. You got to protect your players as well, too. Tuck that ball, get the first down, or, you know, make it a fourth and one, maybe. I don't know. But you got to tuck the ball there. That's the best option there is for you to tuck the ball.
Right.
So that was definitely one that he wanted back for sure.
So Panthers get the ball back. And this was kind of a theme after that. You know, we ended up 3rd and 8. That was a horrible play. Give the ball back to the Panthers. And this is when the defense started cooking. I mean, this is one of the things, if you look at this, this is just beautiful. And, you know, the sack by Hargrave comes in nearly untouched and just takes out Darnold on 3rd and 4. But, you know, I know we gave Fletcher Cox a lot of grief last week. But look at this play. If you back it up, on the snap, look at how many guys go with Cox. He's got 2 guys on him, maybe 3 on Fletcher Cox.
100%.
That leaves Hargrave coming through completely untouched. It makes such a big difference when Fletch is in there. So I know we gave him grief during the Chiefs game because, and he hadn't had a sack all season, but he's still taking up space. And this play right here made me realize that maybe Hargrave's success, and I'm not going to give Fletch all the credit, but part of that success is due to Fletcher's ability to take up that much space on the defensive line. And Sweat,
it is due to the ability. Fletcher Cox, he demands a lot of attention. And oftentimes, in every game he's played, he's been double teamed. That's why his numbers are down. This is Hargrave, 6 sack on the season here. 6 sack on the season from a defensive tackle. That means you're running free often as a defensive tackle. And if you even notice later on in the game when Cox gets his sack, it's because they're now switching to Hargraves, because Hargraves is a force to be reckoned with. And long as both of them keep having the games or keep having that same intensity that they're having, man, this may be the two, no disrespect to Aaron Darnold, but this may be the two best combination in the game defensive tackle wise. Hargraves has 6 sacks from defensive tackle, bro. That's in 5 games. That's big. That's big time. That's big time. Defensive tackle, it's big time, man. So, to your point, Fletcher Cox is drawing that double team, and it is freeing up Hargraves, and this is a tribute to his success. But a captain like Cox, I'm sure he loves the success of the young guys. So right. It works.
And that's a great point to make, because defensive tackle, you don't expect that kind of production, and these guys are wreaking havoc in the middle of the defense week after week. So I'm going to take a step back from Fletch and give him a little bit of the credit that he's due. Yeah, like we said last week, he's gained a little bit of weight, but he's still taking up space. He's still wreaking havoc on offensive lines. And Sweat is also performing from the end spot. Could you imagine if Derek Barnett could just all of a sudden limit the penalties and start living up to his potential as well?
It's like you read my mind during that Carolina game. I was like, everybody's playing well.
Yep.
You know what? Barnett played well that
he
game.
He did.
But we're saying, over the course of the season, Had Barnett played as well as he played in the Carolina game, it just makes you wonder, like, where could we be? Do we have the best line? Because Sweat, Cox, Hargraves, they're becoming the problem, man, especially Sweat. Sweat's a lot to deal with out there. That's why you need a guy like Barnett. And we had that in Graham before he got hurt. It wasn't a lot of emphasis on that. We had that in Graham before he got hurt. We do have a really good line in Barnett. Controls his mental mistakes, we may have the best line.
It's funny you said that. You read my mind, because I was going to mention Graham as well. Can you imagine we're doing all this with Graham on injured reserve with these four guys? And if Barnett can just step up just a little bit, limit the crazy penalties, it is going to be one of the more dominant lines in football. And then if the linebackers can step up like they did in this game, it could make a big difference for us. Picking it up.
Singleton had a hell of a game.
He did. Singleton, Avery, Wilson, more than I've ever seen them play as well. TJ Edwards, I mean, it was a good
Edwards.
Game.
Edwards, I was going to bring up Edwards. Like, man, Edwards, we'll go. We'll go as we go.
So Eagles get the ball back, 6 minutes left in the second quarter, and this is a 3rd-and-19 play that I was very kind of disappointed in, because if you look at it again, the Panthers read this all the way. This is a little screen pass to Gainwell. Again, it doesn't work. You see that they're lined up for it, and it's just one of those type of plays where if a team is in man and you don't make your blocking assignments, it's going to get blown up. They see this. There's no disguise in it. They know it's a screen. You see the linemen. If you look, the linemen are pulling, but they're late. Everybody's late.
Everybody's late.
You could almost say that Hurts maybe threw this too early because of the pressure, but it's just not a good look, and then nobody's covering the defensive player.
I wonder if he throws it early due to the offensive player downfield that we've been getting when he does do a play action.
Could be.
So I wonder if he's trying to get the ball out faster, because, you know, last couple of games we gotten that ineligible.
But it's just
receiver downfield.
It's just ugly.
This is bad play.
Again, another punt.
And no blocking.
We're near the end of the half, and 3 points by the Eagles just off of a turnover. So the Panthers get the ball back again. Up 10-3, little pass over the middle to Chuba Hubbard. Again, this is when we go back to that zone. This is what infuriates me. Did you see the snap? Pre-snap look, we've got men backed up off the line of scrimmage. Again, 10 yards off the line of scrimmage. We've got only two linebackers to even stop the run. And then at the snap, they back off and leave the open middle of the field wide open for Hubbard to come through and catch the ball. So the team, when you back up, the linebackers back up 10 yards off of the line of scrimmage like that, you're going to get beat on those easy plays. You're giving them easy completions to the running back over the middle. So I was glad to see Gannon mix it up, but it seemed like every time he went back to the zone, we saw plays like that. And it's in the video. If you watch the video, when the Eagles are in man, they're shutting them down. And I want to say, watching over the course of the entire game, it seemed like they were in man over 70% of the time, which it made me a happy boy.
And the results of this at this point in the game, Darnold, he has a touchdown, but he only has 56 yards with 6 minutes left or so to go in that first half. He's still only at 56 yards passing. So defense is, you know, doing a hell of a job here overall.
Right.
You know, a couple misses here and there. Our offense was our problem in the first half for sure.
Yeah, and giving them constant opportunities. I think in a game like this where you don't have a Mahomes, especially we don't have a Mahomes, a mobile quarterback, and it's the same thing that's going to be true for Tampa Bay on Thursday night. You got to play man and put pressure on Darnold to make mistakes. You have to do the same thing to Tom Brady. And we'll talk more about the Buccaneers, but I'm just saying in this type of game, man was mostly called for. So this is a big play here. So after the big play to Chuba Hubbard, the Panthers get the ball. They're down inside the 20 in the red zone. They've got a third and 10. Eagles have to hold them to a field goal here right before the half. It is a must. So let's pick this up. Off the line of the ball, here comes Sweat off the edge, and just bam, just nails Darnold. Massive sack right there. Just, again, what we talked about with the pressure from the front four, you see it right there. It's so key. So I want to go back to the pre-snap look on this. You've got, again, seven in the box, roughly. They've got three wide receivers split out. We do have a little bit of a zone look here with Slay, but it doesn't matter at this point. It didn't matter if it was zone, because as soon as the ball is snapped, these guys are in. All four of them are just pushing that offensive line around. Now, I understand the Panthers did have a weak line going in, so I don't want to give them too much credit, but it's just still dominance by our offensive line. So Eagles get the ball back after the field goal. It holds them. Now we're down 13-3. 2 minutes to go in the half, and then Kelce just, I mean, he firebombed it over Hurts' head, which is just devastating. The thing here Hurts has to do is he's got to knock that ball out of bounds, and he's very...
You can't try to pick that ball up with one hand. No way. You can't pick that up with one hand. I know you have confidence in your ability, but you have to just do what's best for the team there, man. Just swat the ball out of bounds and save yourself an injury as well, too, on a fluke play.
Yeah,
so just swat the ball out of bounds, and we'll take the safety. Now we're at 15-3.
Yeah, so, and that's what ended up... We're very lucky that it wasn't worse than that. Extremely lucky, because if you go into halftime down 20-3, it's a totally different complexion of a game coming out in the second half. So the Eagles need some points going into the half, and they needed a big play from Hurts with 25 seconds left on a first and 10 from the 31. Hurts backs up to pass, and this is just, again, here's the Panthers in zone, and if you look at them, they're spread out. They're leaving the field wide open because they're in this prevent defense, which gives Hurts a lot of room to maneuver, and he finds Devontae Smith just right in front of the defender, just on the other side of the 50. And what that ended up leading to was our boy Jake Elliott again coming through in the clutch. And I want to mention this with a 50. Was it 59 yarder? 59
yards. It was a 58 yard field goal. To my understanding, I believe it was a 58 yard field goal, man. That was major, man. I was like, that was a big kick. That's huge. You just give up a safety there, and now you're going in half. Now it's, you know, still a two possession game. It just gives confidence going into the locker room, making that kick there.
Right.
And just getting points when you didn't think that you might have gotten points due to, I think they had less than a minute when he started that drive or something like that, 20-something seconds when he throws the ball to Smith. So it's good to get at least three there and end the half.
And again, it reminded me shades of the Giants game in week three of the 2017 season where Elliott hit the 60-yard field goal to win the game against the Giants, and it kind of propelled the Eagles forward. This did send him into the locker room up on a high, but again, the third quarter was kind of more of the same on both sides of the ball. It kind of went back and forth. We had some good plays on defense and kind of lackluster plays on offense, and the defense was definitely keeping him in the game. I love this play right here where Steven Nelson just basically eats Robbie Anderson up for lunch right there, and it's again because he's playing on him in man. If you look at where Nelson makes this play, 100%. It's because he's got everybody's
covered. Good to see our corners actually up close to a receiver when they're attempting to catch the ball versus trying to get to him after they play. So like you said, it was a hell of a play by Nelson to read the route and get up in the defender's face before he tries to catch the ball and make it really difficult. I feel like we haven't made it difficult for a lot of receivers to catch the ball, and that's what we did better in this game here.
And so, you know, get the ball back in the defense again is making plays. And like you said, they're playing up on the receivers, making me feel great watching it back. And then this play happens, which is otherwise a good play. Hurts hits Devontae Smith over the middle, and they're down at the 30. But Smith coughs it up. You can't really say anything there. He got hatcheted out of the ball. You could say he should secure it a little bit better, but it is one of those football plays. There's nothing you can do. So it is what it is. Smith coughs up the ball, gives it back again to the Panthers. And so we need like we have the entire game, we need plays out of our defense after the Smith fumble. And this is when I think the defense was already controlling this game. But at this point, we just get another massive sack. And this one is Fletcher's first sack of the year. Fletcher comes in on Sam Darnold and just takes him out. And that sets up another fourth down to give this ball back down 15-6. Now coming down to the third quarter, the way I was looking at it, this here, again, this was started off a series of plays. That play to Fletch that forced him to punt on fourth down set up, or after the Devontae Smith fumble, it set up a chain reaction of just turnovers, where it's like seemed like each team just didn't want to hold on to this ball. So you get the Devontae Smith fumble, you get the Fletcher Cox sack that forces fourth down, Eagles get the ball back, and then the pass that Jalen Hurts throws to Goddard down the sideline. Was it to Ertz?
I believe it was to Ertz.
You're probably right.
Yeah, the pick down the field to Ertz.
Yeah, so this is the play here. So Ertz
could have been Goddard, but I thought it was Ertz.
It's Ertz. You're right. So he's throwing Ertz down to the sideline, and again, great play by the defense there, but it's an overthrown ball, and I think we talked about this the last week that we rather see Hurts overthrow than underthrow. That time he overthrew, and it's an interception.
Right. It was a bad look in general. He stared at Hurts. Every time you go from Hurts to Ertz, he stared Ertz down the entire way. You watched the drop back. He just dropped back, and he's just, Ertz may have said something to him in the huddle, like, "Hey, man, watch the wheel route on the sideline. I got him." Right. He just forced the ball. He shouldn't have made the throw at all. He was double covered. Yeah. He was double covered. And I just thought it was a bad decision to throw that ball there in general. I thought it was predetermined.
At this point of the game, after that interception by Hurts, you kind of go, all right, he's just not on his game. The offense is out of sync. This is probably not going to be our game. It's one of these defensive struggles. 15-6, 7 minutes and 45 seconds left in the third quarter. What are we going to do? But it goes back to our defense. Darnold gets the ball on his 43, throws over the middle, and then there is Darius Slay with his second pick of the game. Again, playing in man. And if you see this play from multiple angles, what I loved about it when I saw the game was how Slay just sets DJ Moore up. He just sets him up. You can't really see it on the replays that we have here, but he just sets him up. He lays back and watches Arnold. Arnold's looking directly at Moore, and once that ball is thrown, he undercuts him, and he makes a great pick. And that's what Slay can do if you put him man-on-man with receivers. And I've been saying it since the year started. That's why we went out and got Slay. It's not for him to play zone coverage. It's so he can be out on an island making plays against the best receivers in the league. So now the Eagles get the ball back just on the other side of the 50. And then this is a bad look. Hassan Reddick, one of the best linebackers.
From Camden, New Jersey.
Yeah, he's just amazing. And then
hear me say that again.
He gets Hurts not once. Not once, but twice, and really just blows up Mailata, who you've heard me singing Mailata's praises since the beginning of the year, and it's just bad. It's a bad
look. Mailata didn't even get off the ball. If you noticed on that play, there was a silent count, and the whole, I believe, one side of the line moved. You see Kelsey look down, I believe, to the left side of the line. And he hikes the ball, but the whole right side of the line never even moves. Right. So Mailata, he got beat on that play back to back. But on that second play, he didn't understand the silent count because the guard and Mailata, they never even moved. So Hassan Reddick, I'll say this again, from Camden, New Jersey. But it was that silent snap count in Kelsey. If you watch down, Kelsey looks down and Mailata to his right. They never even got off the ball. So Hassan was down. He beat him off the snap. Yeah. Mailata's a big guy, so he has to get off the snap as well, too. And he was beat off the snap because they didn't know the snap count there. Something was off there with the silent count.
That's part of it, and part of it is because Lane Johnson, again, second game missed for personal reasons. Don't know what's going on with him. Hopefully it gets resolved and he can come back. But Mailata's playing out of position. He's playing Johnson's spot at right tackle. And so Dillard's playing left, and I will say this, Dillard had a much better game than against the Chiefs. He's had a decent season filling in. I thought the Chiefs game, he looked like he was weak on his knees, but he seemed like he had his legs under him. He's not allowed a sack on Hurts yet, but he's allowed a lot of pressures. Mailata did give up the two, but that's the only two. They were in that
and the only reason why, I just want to make a point here, the only reason why that I'm not getting on Mailata's technique, per se, is because it was snap count. Snap count, no matter where you're at, if you don't know the snap count, it doesn't matter what position on that line you're playing. That's why I specified they didn't even know the snap. They never even moved. So it wasn't even about technique or anything. Just, hey, man, do you know the snap count here? Yeah. So that was a problem there, but we moved.
Yeah, exactly. So now the Panthers get the ball back after the two sacks. Again, 4 minutes left or 5 minutes left in the third quarter. Not looking good for the Eagles. And we're back in the zone. Look at them backing up off the line of scrimmage. And they're all in zone. You see them just stop. That's why the zone infuriates me. If you watch the play again, so right off the snap, you see everybody backing up, and then they just stay in space. And that leaves the tight end wide open in the middle of the zone. Easy catch. Nobody near him. And that's what I can't stand about the zone. So they give an easy catch up to Thomas there. But then the defensive front four, like they have been doing all season, here comes Hargrave chasing down Darnold. And forces the incomplete pass on third down. And they, I think they went for it on fourth down, didn't even get it. So the Eagles get the ball back now, still down 15-6. Get a good play to Devontae Smith. This is what I saw was the Eagles started to look at what man beaters were because they realized that the Panthers were in man. So as much as I love man, you beat man by throwing slants, crossing routes, and quarterback runs if you've got a mobile quarterback. Because we talked about it with Mahomes. Every time the Eagles went to a man against the Chiefs, Mahomes would just take off running because as soon as those DBs turn their backs to him, he's running down the sidelines. And that's when I think, and this is when things started to change, 38 seconds left in the third quarter. Eagles basically out of it, but Hurts sees that they got man coverage. He hits Devontae Smith for that nice play, gets him to the 36. And then on third and 10, he backs up, looks around, sees Quez Watkins just down the sideline, a man beater, one-on-one with the safety.
Just 53-yarder, man.
And that was to me, and I, you know, we talk about turning points on this podcast, and that was the turning point. Without that play.
And we have the defensive pass interference from Jackson
as
well, too, to kind of set this up here.
Exactly. After
the next play, you got a defensive pass interference on Jackson.
Yep.
And then sets this play up.
And so then it sets this play up down. Now they've got first and goal from the one. And Hurts, again, we haven't been doing really good from first and goal and one. We've tried these silly runs, silly options. They do what needs to be done. They follow the line of scrimmage. Hurts through the line, bursts through for the Eagles' first touchdown of the game. Now, one of the things that I noticed, you can hardly see it in this replay. If you see where he's laying on Dickerson. He's not on the ground. I thought that was brilliant.
He's not on the ground.
He's not on the ground. I loved it because Dickerson just laid down and Hurts just crawled over him to the end zone. He's not on the ground. It's a beautiful sneak. You can't stop that because he's technically not on the ground. It's great. So now we're in it. All of a sudden, going into the fourth quarter, the Eagles are looking at 15-13, only down by 2 points with 12 minutes left in the game. And so good play to Moore. Darnold finds him over across the 50. Our defense at this point needed another stop to get the ball back. And then we give another run up to Chuba Hubbard. But this has been kind of our Achilles heel. We've got to seal those middle gaps. Because to give Chuba Hubbard those kind of plays is demoralizing. But they come right back, and they stop Royce Freeman on that play there. And that was huge for them to stop Royce Freeman there, to come back after stopping Chuba Hubbard. And that was a third down play. So the Eagles end up forcing a punt on third down. 9 minutes left, and they have a chance here. And so they actually forced him into a field goal. So Zane Gonzalez got to do a 50-yard field goal, and he does nail it. And now the Panthers are up 18-13. Meaning we have to have the touchdown to win this game with 8 minutes left. And there's another man beater right there. Hurts seeing that everybody's going with the running back when they do that play fake, and he's got the left side of the field open, and that comes back later on. Again, another play to Hurts. Great play by Smith to be able to come back to the ball. That's another way you beat man is with the with comeback plays where the receiver can go out and turn around, and Smith was doing that. This was here on a third and four, which really a bad play to Gainwell. Because Hurts throws into double coverage there. That could have been disastrous for us. And on a third and four from the inside of the 40, they needed a completion there. And this one was just, badly thrown. Hits the defender in the back.
Should have went to Ertz there for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Should have went to Ertz. He was coming down wide open. Or Goddard. Sometimes I can't tell.
That's just a misread by Hurts there. And then they have to go for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes left in the game, have to go for it. Here is, again, they're playing man. This is a ball I know that Hurts wants back. He throws to Ertz, but he just overthrows the pass. If you look at it, it's just...
He does. Was the ball catchable? Yes.
Yes.
Could he have thrown it better? Yes.
At high speed, this ball was really hard to catch. It was just...
It was humming.
And it's just outside of his hands.
It's low.
Yeah.
And it's low, so that makes it even harder.
So what does the defense got to do? 4 minutes left, down by five. Defenses again... We put it on them the entire game. Defense has to get a stop. And so the the Panthers lining up on the 46-yard line, Darnold on 3rd and 3, and Robbie Anderson just, again, similar play to what ended up with the play before with Ertz.
Ertz. Mm-hmm. It's like it's catchable, but it's still slightly off.
Exactly. But why was it that way? Was because the Eagles' pressure was forcing Darnold into incompletions. And this is, to me, when you've got those four down linemen humming and you've got really good man coverage, it forces mistakes like that. So it does make those passes, which should be high-percentage passes, into low-percentage passes because he's throwing to the outside, he's throwing to the sideline, and Robbie Anderson doesn't make the play. So instead of going for it, which would have been silly, they were near the 50, but not enough, they decide to punt. And this was, again, one of the biggest plays of the game, special teams play. This made all the difference in the world. You get TJ Edwards coming up through the middle and just, bam, knocks the punt out. Wilson recovers, and now the Eagles are in business inside the 30 after that beautiful blocked punt. One of the best plays of the year, in my opinion. I was in the stadium, and I saw that flash up on my phone at Paul Brown Stadium, and I lost my mind. So here come the Eagles needing plays down the line, and it's a wonderful play to Goddard again. And they're now the Panthers are playing a zone, and Goddard finds the hole in the zone. And then Goddard drops the very next one. This would have been a sure touchdown.
Strike.
So on first,
it was pretty hot, but Goddard has to catch that. Yeah, that hit him square.
Exactly.
You have to catch that one.
And then here's the play that won the game for him.
Hurts. Look at how the defense is lined up. This is a good read by Hurts here.
And they all go. They all follow Sanders. They all follow Sanders. And he'd been taking advantage of that in the fourth quarter. And then he does a little tribute to Cam Newton there with the Superman thing in Carolina. And sets up the game. So all that was left after that was Eagles. They had to go for two. And this, to me, is one of this two-point play with Hurts escaping right here from the rush and then hitting Devontae Smith in the back of the end zone for the two-point conversion. Probably one of his best plays of the year, in my opinion, for Jalen Hurts. Because he gets the escape, throws on the run, and it's beautiful. So now Eagles need a stop to win the game. So it makes it 1st and 20. And then we get the final interception of the game. Again, Steven Nelson playing man on Robbie Anderson and undercuts him and gets the interception. And then it's all
or look like they're playing a receiver in general. It just looked like they knew who they were guarding.
So we had a couple of times where Miles Sanders ran out of bounds as the Eagles were trying to run out of the clock, and that was kind of silly. But ultimately, it looked like the Panthers were just gassed because the Eagles are just running the ball down their throats with both Sanders and Gainwell. So you see on the last few plays, they just got down into that final.
At this point, they're cussing Sanders out on the sideline, then they send the rookie in Gainwell to finish out the game because Sanders ran out of bounds literally twice, inexplicably. It didn't make any sense.
And then this option that hasn't worked all year where Jalen Hurts and Sanders go side by side and Hurts decides to take it up and run, actually works for a change, and they get 4 yards to get the first down and then run out the clock and yell at the clock. So an amazing win, a fantastic win for the Eagles. Looking at it, the highlights and watching the game back, I was like, man, this was a really tough game to win. It really almost felt it sometimes like Carolina just lost this one. And a lot of people could say that the Eagles didn't win, Carolina just lost because they had the lead and just gave it up. But I'm going to disagree with that, and I'll say why, is that never once in that game did the Eagles' defense crack or crumble. They were playing hard every single down, and they were taking it to Carolina. The problem was things just didn't fall into their way. Outside of one touchdown drive that the Panthers had, they were held to field goals when they needed them. You know, and then the Panthers got a safety, which led them to points. The Eagles stood tough. Our offense was putting them in really bad positions, having to continually punt, giving good field position to the Panthers that led to those field goals. Because when you look at the statistics from the game, they're kind of abysmal on both sides of the ball. I mean, first downs 15-17, passing first downs 8-9, rushing first downs 6-6, third down efficiency, 4 out of 13 third downs to 5 out of 15 for the Panthers. Crazy. Fourth down efficiency doesn't matter. Total play 61-70, and then total yards for each team. The Eagles had 273 total yards to the Panthers, 267. That's for two NFL teams. That's a low scoring game. That's a defensive game. So it really, to me, came down to how did the defenses play? And the Eagles defense outperformed the Panthers defense, and that's what ended up winning the day. So looking at some other stats from the game, you got The passing numbers, very, very low for Jalen Hurts. 22 of 37 for 182 yards. For Sam Darnold, even worse. 21 of 37, so percentage-wise, roughly the same, but 158 yards for an NFL quarterback.
Just the yards per pass, 4.7 and 4.0 is the most glaring. Yeah. And just speaking on these stats in general, I thought our defense did play well. The game changers throughout the game, in my opinion, was that in the first quarter, our DNs weren't containing Darnold. And if you see, he would slip out and run on those third downs, and our defensive tackles, Hargraves, Cox, they're out there getting them out. And I remember saying to myself, like, man, why are our defensive tackles running down all of the players instead of our defensive ends, like Sweat and players like that? And then if you see, as the game goes on, those third downs, we got sacks, we got hurries, we just changed what we did. Third down, to me, what we did on third downs was the difference between what we've done previous weeks, even the one that we won against the Falcons, versus this week. Our line played solid, and they got a lot of pressure on Darnold. They forced a lot of high throws on Darnold at the end of the game. Darnold wasn't comfortable towards the end of that game with throwing three picks, and he was sacked three times, and he was hit pretty hard when he was sacked. You know, so Sweat, Cox, Hargraves, you know, by the end of the game, I think that played the part. I think our line's discipline and no stupid penalties from our lines this week, or our defense in general. We stopped the extension of the plays. In the previous week, we would just continue to extend plays, extend drives for the offense. And this week, we didn't do that. And it looks like it. And you have a quarterback like Darnold, who isn't, you know, great. You know, so long as you don't give him any extras. We didn't give Darnold extras. So right. I don't believe, I'm agree with you, I don't believe that the Panthers gave away this game or they had it. I think they never really was established. Like I said, Darnold only had 56 yards passing towards the end of the first half. That doesn't, you know, that game is still wide open.
And then that's the thing, is that there were times where the defense did break down in that zone coverage. And I say the only time I ever really seen them break down in the past was when they gave it to Darnold and they weren't putting pressure on those receivers. They weren't sticking to them. When the Eagles defenders stuck to those receivers, they were unstoppable, and Darnold couldn't find anybody open. And that's why I think that 158 yards is so key. Rushing was not great, 91 yards to 109 for the Panthers. My problem is that Sanders only got 11 carries. At least it's better than three. But he had 45 yards and 4.1 yards a carry. So it tells me, like, he's doing his job. You got to give him the ball more in this type of situation. And I think in those plays, and especially the first half, where the Eagles were going three and out, three and out, three and out, and through the third quarter even, the offense didn't really come alive until the fourth quarter. That's when Miles Sanders needs to play. You had Kenneth Gainwell with two carries for 16 yards at 8.0 yards per carry. And, of course, Jalen Hurts had nine rushes for 30 yards. So that led to the 91 yards. On the other side of the ball, we gave up another 100 yards to our running back. Chuba Hubbard had 24 carries for 101 yards. So this is the difference, is that Chuba's getting 24 carries and Miles Sanders is getting 11. So that's got to change. Still won the game, so they've got, it's something they got to work on. And I know the RPOs are limiting that, but it's still got to happen. Again, like you said about the penalties, big down here. The Eagles, six penalties for 60 yards. And the way they've been doing all season, I'll take that.
A lot of that was in the first half. They cleaned up so much in that second half. A lot of those penalties were first half.
Right. The big penalty to Ward for the pick in the end zone, and then the 15-yarder for the face mask to Singleton, that all comes into play right here. So, yes, I'm much happier with that. On the other side, the Panthers had nine penalties for 69 yards. Turnover battle, we won 2-3. Time of possession, we still have not really controlled that, and I think it comes down to running the ball. You run the ball more, you're gonna own the rock more, and that's where the Eagles have got to improve. So, 24-57 time of position for the Eagles, 35-03 for the Panthers. In the end, it was a where it matters. The Eagles beat the Panthers. The Panthers did not beat themselves, 21-18. And so we're happy. I'm happy with that. I don't know about you. A win's a win. After three straight losses, like you said, we needed this. We needed this week. I mean, I never realized how important it was until we started doing the podcast, because I'm like, man, I can't do another podcast where I got to face people and say, dang,
we lost. We have a whole bar behind me. I have a whole server just bringing me drinks because this is how bad it's going to get. But, hey, 2-3, short week. I appreciate the defense. I appreciate everything. You know, I thought the Eagles played well. And, you know, sometimes it's good for a young quarterback to have a comeback game, no matter – if it was by, you know, 30 points or just a, you know, a few touchdowns, that defense held, and they just gave them enough time to close out the game. And I think it's another road win for us. We're obviously a good road team. Maybe we play a little better, but we got to clean up those first half issues, and we have to start way faster if we're going to establish a run game. I think it comes from not starting fast enough. That's why we don't run the ball as much as we should.
Right.
But it's something that we definitely have to continue to work on, because you can't close out teams if you can't run the ball.
No.
That's just as simple as that.
And you can't even establish the pass if you're not running consistently. So it's going to be important, especially going into Tampa Bay, who is one of the toughest run defenses in the league. And we're going to talk about the Tampa Bay matchup in a minute. But right now we're going to just take some time to go through some of the other segments that we like to do. And this one is one that it's easy to find every week. It is called the Stupid. The stupid news headline of the week. And this one, I tell you what, this is not a stupid news story. I'm going to start off by saying that. But I think it's one that is football fans that we probably should talk about a little bit. And it's a little controversial. But the headline is stupid. Because we know that this week a lot came out about John Gruden and the leaked emails when they were doing the Washington football team investigation into their misgivings, or whatever you want to say, their misdeeds, people accusing them of sexual harassment, a toxic work environment, all that. So they were examining all these emails, and I know you've seen it. You had to have, if you're a football fan. You know, they came out with the email from John Gruden about Zamora Smith, the Players Association head, and calling him, what do you call him, Dumborass Smith or something like that, and then said his
called him a lot of things.
Yeah. And that was the first thing that came out. And then, but a lot of people just kind of fluffed it off and said, well, you know, even if you saw, was it Sunday Night Football?
He said his lips were the size of Michelin tires.
Yes, he did.
He said his lips were Michelin tires.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Which is a direct quote, because he's black. Like, that's, you can say what you want, Gruden, but I don't think you're talking about the color and the size of somebody's lips, if it wasn't somebody that looked like Smith. So you can miss me with that,
what was
other stuff he was talking about.
Yeah, so what was surprising was that how many people defended him, including Mike Tirico and Tony Dungy, saying, because they knew him, they have a relationship with him, and defended him. And then, of course, after that, after the initial email came out and nobody kind of did anything, you know, he met with the Raiders owner and they said, okay, you know, everything's fine. You know, we didn't even suspend him. And then,
if he was just racist, he would still have a job.
Okay. But yeah, so they come out with now a ton of other emails that at least they're misogynistic, more racist comments, and we don't know what they are. And then homophobic slurs. So that came out. And so now he had to step down as head coach of the Raiders. And so That is what is going on right now. The thing that struck me about this headline was, what cracked me up about this headline is that the USA Today put out, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones responds to John Gruden's resignation and leaked email comments. And my first reaction to this was, who cares what Jerry Jones has to think? The only reason, and you could correct me if you think I'm wrong, the only reason that the reporters are asking Jerry Jones about this is because you can't tell me that there might not be some emails or something out there in Jerry's world. And man, these reporters are like, so what do you have to say about it? And of course, what do you think Jerry said? I don't have any comment about it. To me, this is, again, it's an example of when we do the stupid news headline of the week, this is the non-story involved in the major story. This is a smoke and mirrors. Why is this an article? And if you read it, it's all about Jerry Jones' opinion on the John Gruden's resignation and the leaked emails. Come on. This is not a story. It's, again, a stupid news headline of the week.
Right. And it is a stupid headline. And I know that's what we're focusing on. But there were so many other headlines that tried to gaslight the John Gruden situation.
Yeah.
Where you're just bringing up things that aren't relevant to the emails right now. We're talking about the emails that John Gruden sent out. This has nothing to do with Michael Vick. They talk about Antonio Brown. You just seen every headline. It's like it started to get gaslight. Like, well, how can we keep Antonio Brown in the league? Or how can we keep, you know, this? Because I think Tampa put out a statement because that was their former coach and they're taking him down from the Ring of Honor.
Right.
And one of the things they started talking about, well, how can you sign Antonio Brown while he's still going through a civil suit? And that's like, you know, the definition of passing the buck, gaslighting, you name it, you know. But like you said, you know, Jerry Jones' name shouldn't even be mentioned in this situation because until further notice, Jerry Jones is simply the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah. Everything else is, I know he's an outspoken person, but that doesn't, and just because he went to Arkansas, I'm not going to put smut on his name for no reason just because of his origin or what he may or may not done. I'm one of those folks that I'll just, you know, if it comes, you know, to me, then, you know, I'll deal with it then. And Mike Tirico and Tony Dungy, they should have waited until all the facts came out before they made such a defense. And that oftentimes what happened, they try to get past an issue so fast that they forget to look at the details and it becomes worse. So it went from a situation where they didn't handle it necessarily when he was just talking about Smith. And then all of a sudden you see that he talked about Roger Goodell. He talked about women officials. And also, I don't remember the... Oh, yeah. Now, Roger Goodell was the homophobic star.
Yeah.
And then the misogynistic was the female referees. So, you know, it just... You just got to wait for things to play out, man. You have to wait for everything to play out before you can make such a glaring, you know, backing. Unless they're just, you know... I don't know what made them do that, but a lot of people did. If you look at Monday morning, before it all broke, really on most folks downplayed John Gruden by just merely saying, well, he didn't work in the NFL. We move on. And it was just kind of like, well, hold on. We're still talking about somebody's character here. And if you don't handle it there, or if it's just kind of swept under the rug, you don't know what else they may have out there. And lo and behold, what's done in the dark will always come to the light, man. I heard that in church one Easter Sunday. I'm not a church guy, but the one Easter Sunday I went, and then the preacher, that was the word of the day. What happens in the dark will come to light. And there is no, this is a situation that happened in the dark and it came to light. It just puts more smut on Washington Football Organization's name in general.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's all about that. There's supposed to be more to come about the Washington team and Dan Snyder and all that's going on there. So, and it's true. What you do in the dark is going to be brought to the light. And Gruden is unfortunately, like I said, you can make the defense. Tirico made the defense that it was 10 years ago and it was emails. We have to judge these by a case-by-case basis. If it's one offhanded comment, maybe you could defend him and say, okay, he was mad at DeMaurice Smith. He made a racial slur. And you could say, because I know him, Tirico and Dungy, that's not who he is. And that's what they said. You know, they have a personal relationship with him. So they defended him based on their personal relationship. And then tons more comes out, and now they look foolish. So like you said, it's a mistake of... Sometimes we make a mistake when we rush to judgment, and sometimes we can make a mistake when we rush to defend.
When they rush to defend, you know the bad part about it, now it just makes Tony Dungy and Mike Tirico look like a bad judge of character. So it's like, no matter what you do, you can defend this person when he's doing wrong. Yeah. If you defend them too early, you like a judge of...
Yeah, they lose either way.
And either way. That's why when it's not your situation, or if it didn't affect you personally. Now, I can see if they spoke on how the comments made them feel or how they responded to the comments.
But, right.
You know, they just backed him up, saying it was 10 years ago. That was kind of the sentiment throughout media on Monday until I was watching that Monday Night Football game and the news broke that John Gruden has been fired and everything. But throughout that first whole day of Monday, you know, folks were like,
it's over now. Yeah, it's over now. And it was until somebody said, okay, well, we've got more then. Here at Sunday Night Football, they got to cover it. And of course, it's brought up to these two announcers and they feel compelled to give their opinion. And that's the thing. And that's what kind of drives me crazy about that stupid news headline is they're asking every single owner now these questions. I don't know if they're trying to catch him out, what they're trying to do, because we know Jerry Jones, he's an old school Texan. He may not be racist, but people are going to assume that he is based on who he is. We don't know, but people are going to assume. So they're going to him and it seemed like, what do you have to say? It was kind of like they wanted him to condemn the comments. And all Jerry did was just say, I'm not going to say anything.
Cause it's not Jerry's problem.
And it's
it's not Jerry's problem. Yeah. I don't, you know, like you said, I'm not waiting around looking for a Jerry Jones to calm me down when I'm reading the article and the emails for myself.
Exactly.
Jerry Jones is not a mentor in my life.
Exactly. So, yes, sir. So that's all we've got to say about the Gruden situation. It's more about the stupid headline. Yeah, we could go into depth on it, but that's not what we're here for. We're here for Eagles, and it's just what we do to kind of throw a little levity. This one's not as much funny, but the whole fact of this stupid headline is going to keep coming. And believe me, there were more stupid headlines out there. I don't even want to get into them. There was four or five that were good candidates for this week that were just the silliest things I've ever seen when you're trying to cover football, and the questions and the stories that they build are silly. But now we're going to get into the meme of the week, and it has to do with who our opponent is coming up tomorrow night. Now, I think a couple of weeks ago when I previewed this game, I thought it was going to be a Monday night, but I had my dates all backwards, and I couldn't remember what date October 14th was, and it is a Thursday night game. So at prime time for the Eagles. And here's our meme of the week. It is the GOAT, if you will, Tom Brady, if you will. He is a GOAT. I mean, he's a Michigan quarterback and I love him, but I didn't love him in 2005 when we played him in the Super Bowl and they came out of the video gate where they were filming teams sidelines. And it did seem like in that Super Bowl that they had a cheat sheet of every single Eagles play. Because, and even then, the Eagles only lost by three. And I could imagine if that was played on a level playing field. That Eagles team with McNabb and Terrell Owens, it was, and our defense at that time with Trotter leading that defense and Dawkins, was probably one of the best Eagle teams of all time in 2004, 2005. And I felt like they were cheated when it all came out. I felt like they were cheated out of that Super Bowl. And I still, it kind of grinds my gears because I went to a lot of games that year. And actually that year, the night they won the NFC championship game against Atlanta, I was working security as a volunteer for the military. And I got to hang out with multiple Eagles and celebrate after the game, which was a dream come true for me. So I met guys like Brian Westbrook, and I met our center Hank Fraley. I met John Runyon, Dahani Jones, and Nate Wayne, and it was great. It was, and I felt like this team was destined. And then we go up against this team, and it seemed like they knew everything that we wanted to do when we do it. Now, maybe it was just good coaching from Belichick, but when an allegation comes out that there are tons of videotapes of them recording, and then they get caught a couple of years ago doing the same crap all over again, recording the Bengals on the sideline of the Browns, and it's like they never stop. This is what they do. Yeah, Deflategate, this is what they do. So you can say I'm a hater, and you can say that the Patriots are just good, and they are. I won't deny the fact that they're a good football team, but they do use methods that are outside of normal means to get an advantage in games, and one of them was the cheat sheet. So the meme of the week is Tom Brady looking surprised and going, why weren't we given a cheat sheet on their plays? And hopefully that's what's going to happen on Thursday night, that he won't have a cheat sheet of our plays, because we got to play Brady and the Buccaneers, and this is a team that's really hot right now. And so that brings us into our matchup for this week, which is going to be the Buccaneers, and we got to talk about Tubby's keys to victory. So take it away, Tubby.
Yes, sir. Get off to a fast start. I just mentioned it earlier, like the Rams did to the Bucs in week three. They jumped out to them basically like 21-7 in that first quarter. And Tom Brady, I think, ended up throwing about 55 passes that game, which makes him uncomfortable because, I mean, it's 55 times he could have been hit, and he doesn't like to be hit. Stop the pass. I mean, we're going against the number one team in the NFL. So if you're going to beat them, if you're going to even think about beating the Bucs, you have to stop the pass. I think it's going to take an incredible game from Hurts. I think he's going to need 300 passing yards and at least 50 rushing. You know, I may even throw in there Sanders needs about 100 as well, too, because we're going to need to keep the ball. If we don't have the ball, we're going to be in trouble. And that's why, you know, rushing, you know, just I think Hurts is going to have that type of game. Limiting penalties just because, you know, we're the number one team in the league, I believe, still in penalties. So 45 through like the first three, that's absurd. So if we give Tom Brady extra drives, then you can forget about it. You got to basically take the ball from them and have them play from behind the whole game if you can. I know this is what you drove there, but stay in man coverage. Yeah, man, we're going to definitely have to keep some safeties up top. They have a lot of weapons on the Bucs. Even last week, Miami played them a lot in man, and Antonio Brown just ran all over the fields like they couldn't. So whoever our nickel man is that sticking Brown, he's going to have to be on his P's and Q's, man, because they sent him all over the place. So definitely have man. I think we play the same man, that 7-yard off man. I think that worked really well for us last game against Darnold versus the – I think if we press, I think we could be in trouble, especially with Evans. Evans is such a big receiver. you don't want him running free down the sideline, and he can high point the ball. He's a very physical receiver. He wants the ball more than most DBs and Evans. So I think that's a lot of the keys, man, that are to our victory, man. What you think, Lee?
Well, going off of what you said, first of all, yeah, the getting off to a fast start is spot on. It's really going to be rough because right now the Bucs lead the league in rush defense. They're only allowing 2.9 yards per carry, which is first in the league, and 45 rushing yards a game. So while we said we need to get Sanders more involved, this might not be the game where he does get involved. Not saying that you can't give him some carries, but they do have to get them off balance. And I think like you said, the key to beating them is keeping Brady on the sidelines, keeping their offense off the field. And we haven't led a game in time of possession yet this year. So we've got to find some way. And a part of that may be doing a more methodical passing game where we can get down the field in chunks and take what the defense gives us. Because the thing is as good as the Buccaneers are on the run D, they're equally bad pass defense. So right now their defense is giving up 314 yards per game, which is 32nd in the league. Worst in the league. Now, a lot of that is...
Rams killed them. DeSean Jackson had a hell of a game. Oh, the Rams killed them.
Right. And so that's a tape that the Eagles really need to look at, because the pass D for the Buccaneers is suspect. So we've got to play to their weaknesses. And the big part of that is taking advantage of their injuries at corner and being able to do that. So I think you've hit everything spot on. The thing for me is, like, when I say the stay in man coverage to stop the three-headed monster, I did a little graphic for this. I want to show you what I did today. Just a little bit of a Photoshop there. It's Godzilla with the Eagles helmet on facing the Ghidra, the three-headed monster, with each of them with a Buccaneers helmet on. And that's how I feel the Eagles are going to be facing the Buccaneers. They've got three receivers right now that Mike Evans, like you mentioned, had 113 yards and two touchdowns against Miami. Godwin just had 70 yards receiving. And then Antonio Brown, 124 yards and two touchdowns against Miami. Brady himself passed for 411 yards and five touchdowns for 144 rating. And so this is what we're up against. We're up against a team that can hit you with three dynamic wide receivers. I think the Eagles are up to the task with Slay and Nelson and Maddox. It may be a little too much for them. It's one of those games where I wouldn't take the Eagles in this game. I'm just hopeful that they can stay with this three-headed monster to play it to their advantage. But again, it comes down to so many of those other things we talk about in a game like this, is how the running backs or how the linebackers contain the run and contain Fournette to keep him from dictating the pace of the game, and then maybe force passes. And really, it comes down to what we saw in the Carolina game. If we can get from our front four what we got in the Carolina game and get that constant pressure on the outside of Brady, we know what that does. We've beaten Brady before. You give him pressure, then he can make the errant throw and the errant mistake, and that's when our corners can take advantage. So it's going to be a tough game. Any way you slice it, I'm looking forward to it. It's Thursday night, going out with friends to watch it. You know, we may end up getting our butts kicked, but I'm going to be there with my head held high because we did win. And this was what stinks about winning against the Panthers. We lose three straight. We win against the Panthers, and now all of a sudden we got to face the Buccaneers on Thursday night. Yay. Yes. So
definitely not the team you want to play on a short week.
No, exactly. But, you know, this schedule, if you look at it top to bottom, there's very few gaps in it. So we just have to play. Like you say, we got to play who's in front of us and move on. So here's our injury report for this week for the Eagles. Not looking really good. Today it was announced that Dallas Goedert has been put on the injured reserve COVID-19 list. It's very unlikely he will play unless he gets cleared tomorrow before the game, but it still doesn't look like he's going to make it. If it was Sunday, he probably still would play. But this is one of those things where he's vaccinated and he either came in contact with somebody like it happened earlier in the year. But we still have Zach Ertz out there, so I'm concerned. It'd be great if Goddard was healthy. We still have weapons. Lane Johnson, again, is questionable for this week. It looks like he is out for that personal issue. Don't know what it is. Derek Barnett is questionable with an ankle injury. Jordan Mailata is questionable with a knee injury, but it looks like both of those guys will play. Isaac Seumalo still on injured reserve. Kevon Wallace is going to expected to come back week 7. And Brandon Brooks, our offensive guard, is still on the injured reserve and expected to return on week 10. On the Buccaneers side of the ball, Tom Brady has an injured thumb and is questionable, but we expect him to play. However, could affect his throwing hand. He injured that against the Patriots, so we'll have to see how that goes. Antoine Winfield Jr. has a concussion, is in the concussion protocol, so he's questionable. That would be big, as banged up as they are on the defensive side of the ball, for them to lose him. Jason Pierre-Paul, who we're really going to have to watch out for on the defensive side, he has a shoulder injury. He's questionable. Here's one of the ones that gives me hope as far as our running game is concerned. Levante David, their inside linebacker, a
100%
complete beast. He is.
That was the one that I was happy about the most. I mean, go Big Red. He is Nebraska Cornhusker. When he was out, I was like, whew, that gives us a chance.
It does. It really does. As far as the middle of the field for a running game, he's doubtful and leaning more toward out. Their center, Ryan Jensen, is questionable. Pat O'Connor, a defensive end, is questionable with a calf injury. Chris Godwin, knee injury, questionable. It'd be nice to have one of those three-headed monsters out, but I don't think that's going to happen. And Rob Gronkowski, their tight end, we definitely don't need him in this game compared to the three wide receivers, and then you throw Gronk into the mix. Just makes it more and more challenging. He's questionable with a rib injury. Right now, signs point, because it's such a short week, that he may not play in this game, but we won't really know that until a game time. So especially on Godwin and Winfield. So that's it for our preview of the Buccaneers and the Eagles on Thursday night. Do you got any plans to watch the game anywhere particular, that, or are you just going to just hang out at the house?
I won't be watching the game at all, man. I'm going to a concert.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be at a Rod Wave concert with the wife. Yeah, man.
So you'll be like me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was so weird. I saw the date. I said, wow. And the Eagles would play the Bucks of all people on the 14th. I'm not upset about it. You know, I'll catch the game. I'd rather just go enjoy the concert. You know, got to mix in everything. But that is a game that I'm definitely going to record and watch fully. Not the highlights. I'm watching that game in full so I can see. Because this is a litmus test. It really shows us where we're at as a team. We've played some sketchy teams. I mean, we've played the Chiefs. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, overall, this is going to really show us where we're at as a team, because, you know, nobody's playing better than the Bucs right now overall.
I mean, one of the top teams in the league right now. Yeah, they lost to the Rams. Rams are playing great ball too. So they're one of the top teams in the league. Beat Dallas. Dallas is playing great. So they're definitely in the NFC right now. We're looking at Green Bay and those three teams, the Rams, the Buccaneers, and the Cowboys. And we're kind of just on the outside looking in at 2-3. You play well in this game, even if we lose. It shows us where we're kind of at right now. Like you said, it is the litmus test. So you'll probably be like me then. If you have it on your phone and you're looking at the alerts, like in between songs, you might yell out touchdown in the middle of an arena, which that's what I did against the Bengals game. So
I'm hoping the game is over before the headliner comes out.
You're in Mountain Time, so that could definitely be the case. So,
right. So the game, I'll be able to watch the first half. Watch the first half driving up to Denver. I think the headline probably won't come out to about 9:30, 10 o'clock, and the game should roughly be over by then. So I should catch the majority of the game. I should be able to catch the first half.
100%. And the odds on this one is the Buccaneers are favored by a touchdown. So that's going to be, as we make our picks, we'll address that. But that's a lot to overcome, you know, what they're favored by. But it could be worse. I mean, it could be a bigger spread than that, considering how well Brady and the Bucs did against Miami. But we're definitely not Miami. At least I hope we don't put on a showing like that. My thing is, I want to see them fight. They're at home. I want to see the crowd make a lot of noise, make it tough for them. The crowd, the game against the Chiefs, they made a lot of noise for like the first quarter and a half, and then it just died out. The more the Chiefs scored, it just ceased the fans' will to resist the Chiefs' dominance. And so it just went to pieces in the second half. So I'm hoping that they'll come out and support and be their loudest, because we need that Link rocking if we're going to beat the Buccaneers. So taking a look at a couple of games in the upcoming schedule, it doesn't get really any easier for the Eagles, maybe slightly. The Raiders, including all their controversy with their former coach John Gruden, is our next opponent after the Buccaneers. We play them on Sunday, October 24th at 4:05 at Allegiant Stadium. And then after that, on Halloween, on week 8 on Halloween, the Eagles go to Detroit. I actually considered going to this game, but I'm going to just hang out Halloween at the house and enjoy.
Oh, that's right.
It's in Detroit.
I'm just looking at that.
It's like, only 3 hours away from me. I could have gone up there and gone to that game, but it's all right. I'll live. If I had paid more attention, I would have got tickets a long time ago, and I didn't do it. So that's my fault. That's on me. All right, moving right along, looking at our fantasy results from last week. Again, I can't do anything right in fantasy. I think after winning week one, I have not won since, and I just keep getting throttled. This time I got throttled by Marine Raiders, who scored 224 points, which I think is the high in the league this year.
Yeah, that's my older brother. He's stationed out there, and he's a Marine. He's stationed out there at in San Diego, so he's still active duty.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Major Bird. Yo, he kicked the crap out of me. So he did a number. He did a number on me. I had 139, which is respectable, but Derek Carr did me absolutely no favors. Again, I should have started Jalen Hurts over him. Jalen Hurts had, like, I want to say 26, 27 points, which isn't great, but it's better than 11, which is what Derek Carr gave me. And Miles Sanders, he had roughly in the neighborhood around 11 points, which wouldn't have made any difference when I had Gibson, Antonio Gibson, and Chubb in there. So Sanders wasn't a start for me this week. They were on the bench, so I didn't have any Eagles in my lineup. As far as you ended up losing this week as well.
The only thing you need to look at is the Monday night game and Andrews getting 41 points. The rest is I mean, the fact that Andrews, if you looked at, bro, I had a 92% chance of winning that game. Yeah. 92% entering the third quarter. 92%.
That's rough.
Andrews had a hell of a second half. He got two touchdowns and two extra points. And Eckler had three fourth quarter touchdowns. It was just unbelievable. Three fourth quarter touchdowns and Andrews with two touchdowns and two extra points. Like, every ball went to Andrews, and I just could not believe it. So, yeah, he got 51.7 on me, man. Last game, and took it over, man. 92% chance of winning, and I lost.
Yeah, that's a lot of points for a tight end. I usually see that just on the wire. And even a wide receiver having that much is crazy. But, yeah, it looks like an even matchup until then, so that sucks. Yeah, you still got a good team. Me, on the other hand, I got to do some work. Most of my team was auto-drafted, though, because I was out on the golf course when we did the draft.
My brother got high score. Well, Marine Raider got high score on me the week I played them. So I'm sitting there talking to him. He was at the Brady. He watched Brady. He was at the Brady's. He was at the Brady LA game, Rams game. He was at that game when they broke in the new stadium. So he's all texting me. He's like, yeah, Brady didn't. He only threw one touchdown that game, but Brady still got him 50 points that game. He was high score again on me. So anyway.
Now, this week coming up in fantasy, it's a tough. I honestly, the way Derek Carr has been playing, I'm probably just going to take a flyer on Hurts and see what he can do, because the Buccaneer pass defense being what it is, maybe if it turns into a shootout like the Chiefs game, maybe Hurts will put up a lot of points. I don't think I would start Sanders because of their run defense, but you may want to consider starting Devontae Smith in this one, being that their pass defense is so bad.
Well, I am starting Devontae Smith this week. I'm going to sit Thielen. He's been a little inconsistent. And I do plan on starting Devontae, but I have, with Goddard being out, because I do have Ertz as well, I feel like I need to start one or the other. So I may go, instead of Devontae, I may go Michael Pittman or Taj Boyd. So I have some options, luckily.
If Goddard's out, I think Ertz is a decent start. Again, it all comes down to the pass defense. Hurts doesn't tend to look at the tight ends that much compared to Wentz when he was our quarterback. So that is a risk. It is a risk reward. But Devontae is probably a must-start. If you need a third wide receiver or a flex play, Jalen Reagor might even be a good start, or even Quez Watkins. I wouldn't start any of the running backs this week because of the Bucs' D being so good against the run. I don't see a lot of scoring there, but Hurts and the receivers could definitely get you some points in fantasy. So that's our fantasy results and picks for this week, which brings us to our final segment, is our picks game. Now, I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think last week YouTube blocked us because I talked about our picks game and being, you know, that you can join it and whatever, because they sent me a spam notice. I didn't do any spam or fraud or anything like that in our broadcast. I actually appealed to it and said, tell me what I did and I'll stop doing it. But they said, we've reviewed your appeal and we still say you did fraud, and they won't tell me what I did. So it's YouTube. It's whatever. So for all those that watch us on YouTube live, that may be going away. We may be just on Twitch and Facebook after a while, because I don't know what I'm doing wrong. We don't do anything wrong. We don't steal anything. All our music is copyright free, so I don't know. So anyway, as far as the picks go, I'm not going to mention the rules and everything. We've done that a lot here, but we do a picks game on the Where Eagles Dare podcast, and I am a part of it, and some people that are friends of the podcast are a part of it, and it's basically 10 points for a correct pick, minus 10 for incorrect, and then 20 points either way for a lock, one lock. of the week, and that could be 20 points either way, and then it's all totaled up over the course of a season until there is one champion. Well, this week, and I told you about that New England game, I took Houston and told you at home they were going to be tough. Now, they didn't win, but they did cover that 12-point spread, and I went, I not had my greatest week of the year. I did go, I've been 12-4 and 11-5 the past couple of weeks. I went 10-6, which is still admirable for the pro picks against the spread. And I was 1-2 in college for a 40-point plus overall, which extends my lead out to 140 points over second place Chris Buddy, who has 100, and then Jason Livingston, who has 80, and then Dustin Schmidt, Darren Muir, Tim Case, all at 40 points, and then we have Roger Adamson sitting at broke even. I do have to mention our eighth place player is CJ Clark. He's new to the picks game this time around. He went plus 120 points this week. I think he got two games wrong. I think that's what it was. Something along those, maybe three.
That's plus, a hell of a week, man.
He was sitting at minus 140 points coming into the week. That's why he's at minus 20 right now. So, yeah, I was blown away. I would that's a go to Vegas week right there. So, good for him and the, and our all our picks players. This week as far as picks go, I'm going to run down what I've got going on this week. This is a fun week. I anguished over these all day today. We're going to go ahead and start with the Thursday day game. And I'm going to explain myself right here. So I've got Tampa Bay giving 7 to Philadelphia at home. I am taking Tampa Bay, and I'm making it my lock of the week. Now, I do this for a couple of reasons. Number one, I do think that Tampa Bay and their receivers got an edge in us, and it could be a 10-point game. I think that they could win somewhere along the lines of 35 to 24, something along those lines. So I do believe that, but I have hope that the Eagles will cover and win, and I'm trying to jinx myself, because if I make it my lock of the week, maybe if I have bad luck, I'll lose that pick, and the Eagles will not only cover that 7 points. You see where I'm going with this logic? I'm trying to not only, I want the Eagles to win, but I'm hoping that I can curse myself and pick them as my lock of the week and maybe lose that 20 points. I'll gladly lose the 20 points. It's the second time I've made the Eagles my lock. I did it against the Chiefs as well, and I got it that time. So this time I hope I'm wrong. So we'll see what happens. Now, maybe because I just spoke about it, I don't know how curses work and how jinxes work. Maybe if I just spoke about it, it's not going to come true. So we'll have to see how that how it happens. I don't know how that works. So the rest of the picks, I've got Miami at Jacksonville. They're giving 3.5 to the Jaguars. I'm going to take the Jaguars getting the points in that one. Both teams right now are a pile of turds, so I'm going to go with the lesser pile of turds in this point. After that, we've got Indy giving 10 points at home to Houston. I'm going to take Houston again. I'm going to ride the hot hand. I don't know if they'll win this game outright, but I don't like these 10-point spreads, especially this season where more games than ever have been decided by 5 or fewer points than any other season in the last 20 years of NFL history. So definitely
that's a big spread.
Yeah, it's a lot in this season. After that, we got Green Bay giving 4.5 coming off the win, the overtime win with the tons of missed field goals in Cincinnati. Going into Chicago, who are playing really good defense right now, and with Justin Fields, they're doing just enough to win. So I'm going to take Green Bay in the 4.5, but I don't feel great about it. We'll have to see what happens. This is a big rivalry game, so it could go either way, but I'm going to take the Packers. Kansas City's given 6.5 to the Washington football team. I'm going to take that at 6.5 and expect them at Washington to kind of dominate that one. Carolina, this spread keeps going up and down. Earlier today, I saw Minnesota was given 1 point, but right now I have Carolina giving 1 point to Minnesota. And I'm going to take the Panthers, even though we kind of held them back. I think Carolina is going to be looking for blood after losing to the Eagles at home. They got another game at home. I don't expect them to lose 2 in a row at home. We'll see. Baltimore is giving 3 at home to the Chargers. This one probably is going to be one of the best games of the day, considering what Baltimore did at Indianapolis on Monday night and how the Chargers and the Browns just had a massive slugfest, which was an amazing game to watch. I'm going to go with with Bobby Hebert is what I like to call him, or Justin Herbert. The last name Herbert, it always just reminds me of old Bobby Hebert. So Justin Herbert, I'm going to take him and the 3 points to beat the Ravens, but it could go that one could go either way. Cincinnati is going to be coming off that loss to the Packers at home. They're going to be traveling to Detroit. I do believe in the Cincinnati team. I think they're a couple of steps away, just a couple of moves away from really being a good team in the AFC. They're on their way with Mixon, Burrow, and Chase. They just need to put some stuff together on the defensive side of the ball, build up their offensive line, and I don't think Detroit, especially after getting beat after in a come-from-behind loss to the Vikings, mm-hmm. I don't think they have a lot for Cincinnati. Also, I'm going to take the Rams, even though it's a big spread. They're on the road at the Giants, but I just can't take the Giants against this Rams team by any amount. So I'm going to take the 10.5 points, give it to the Giants, and take the Rams on that one. Cleveland is at home at giving 2.5 to Arizona. This one also could go either way. This is going to be a fun game to watch when you got Kyler Murray going up against Baker Mayfield in Baker Mayfield Stadium, where he turns the lights out and sleeps in the restrooms. I don't know how that works. But anyway, or he gives nachos. Did you see the new commercial where he dumps nacho cheese into the Halloween bags for all the kids?
I did. And then pumps the cheese in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that, you know, since he lives at the stadium, apparently, according to those commercials, I'm going to take Baker Mayfield, given the 2.5 points to Arizona, since it's just a field goal. Denver, coming off their loss to Pittsburgh after they had been, you know, pretty much running through some of the worst teams in the league, they faced a bad team, but not a really bad team, and they lost. So Denver's given 3.5 at home to Las Vegas. I'm going to take the Raiders, even though they got a ton of distractions going on. I think that they'll band together as a team, and maybe this will help them. I don't know. We'll have to see how they play. Another big game that's happening on Sunday is Dallas going into New England. There's a lot of talk about this game, but Dallas really has not won in New England in, I'm not sure, it's like 20 years or something like that. And so this is a big one for them. They're giving 4 points to the Patriots. I'm going to take the Cowboys on that one. Pittsburgh is giving 5 to Seattle. I am going to say that the Denver game was about as good as it's going to get for Pittsburgh this season. It made them look like they were actually good again, and it's just Denver. So Pittsburgh, you know, kind of wake up a little bit, guys. You're going to play Seattle, who's not playing their best football right now. They did lose at home to the Rams, but that was a really good game up until near the end, where the Rams kind of overmatched them. So I think Seattle will have a good bounce back game and actually take Pittsburgh out. So I'm taking the 5.
And that's without Wilson as well, too. He's out for like, what, 4 to 8 weeks?
Yes.
Russell Wilson is. So yep. Who's their backup? Geno Smith.
I don't even remember
who got in there. I know.
Yeah, Geno Smith. Okay. And I'm going to take Geno and the points because he played really well against the Rams after Wilson went out. So yeah, it's
okay. Gonna be tough. I didn't catch it. Okay.
He did. He let a couple drive. He did throw a pick at the end that was pretty bad.
Oh, that was the Thursday game. I did catch it. That's right. That was the Thursday game.
And so he did throw a pick that was really bad. But other than that, he did have a couple of really good drives. So he, with a full practice, I think that defense is capable of beating Pittsburgh defense. But we'll see. Okay. I just throw darts at a dartboard and just see what happens and then go from there. And the Monday night game next week is Buffalo giving 5.5 at Tennessee. I definitely will take the Bills on that one. They're just one of the best teams in the league. College-wise, I've got Alabama giving 17 to Mississippi State. I'm picking this one because of after Alabama losing to Texas A&M in the fashion that they did, I expect it's like, if a boxer loses a championship fight, his next opponent is going to get pummeled, especially if you're a prize fighter, and that's what Alabama is. They're not going to come out and play around with Mississippi State. They're going to try to dominate Mississippi State. And even though it's on the road, I think Alabama will beat them by more than 17. Also, I'm going to take San Diego State on the road, giving 8 to San Jose State. And I will also take Navy as an underdog, getting 10.5 points from Memphis. And those are my picks of the week. And that brings us to the end of another podcast there, Tubby. And I'm sad to say it's time for us to go. Do you have anything, any parting words for us?
Just a good win and fly, Eagles fly.
I agree. It was a great win, and I'll follow that up with a big old go Birds. Be sure to check us out on any of your podcast providers that are out there. We are on Stitcher. We are on Amazon Music. We're on Spotify. We are also on Audible and many others. So just look where you go to find podcasts, and if they're not there, let me know. Let us know. Send us an email. You can find us at lee.bird, that is B-Y-R-D, eaglesdare@gmail.com. We'll be back here again next Wednesday for another live stream on YouTube, Facebook Live, and Twitch, so we hope you join us. Again, I am Lee, and this is Tubby, and we will be watching Tampa Bay and Philadelphia Thursday night. So think of us, will you?
Fly, Eagles, fly.
Go Birds.
Thank you.